चातुर्वाण्यं मया स्त्रिस्थां गुणकर्म विभागशा तस्य खरथरम अपिमां विद्य खरथरम अव्ययम्। According to the modes of material nature and the work ascribed to them, the four divisions of human society were created by me, and although I am the creator of this system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable.
My fault, because my voice is not loud enough.
In this verse in the Bhagavad Gita, from the fourth chapter, Bhagavan Lord Shri Krishna is revealing to us that he is the creator of everything. Everything is born of him. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mat sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. Krishna says that I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all of their hearts. Janmadyashayata. The absolute truth is him from whom everything emanates. We have just chanted this very powerful mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, which is a prayer of surrendering our lives in prostrated respects to the divine lotus feet of Lord Vasudev. Vasudev means that Lord who is all-pervading, who is within and without of everything. Everything is within Krishna, and Krishna is within everything. Krishna says in Gita, for one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, for him I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. One who has clear vision can factually see the presence of God everywhere and in everything. But when our vision is clouded by a separate interest, the desire to enjoy the property of God, then by the causeless grace of the Lord, he hides himself, he conceals himself, although he is everywhere, just to facilitate our free choice of wanting to live apart from his will. So the Lord, as explained in Gita, paritra naya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samstapanaradhaya sambhavami juge juge. The Lord descends into this world for the singular purpose of attracting the hearts of his lost servants back to him. And when he appears in this world, he establishes a way of life within society by which everyone, according to their nature, can be reunited in love with the supreme source of everything. Chaturvarnyam mayastristam guna karma vivagasha. The Varna Ashram system, the process of organizing society into four varnas, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, and four ashrams, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. According to guna and karma, according to one's natural inclinations or qualities, and according to the activities one performs. Of course, today in India, this Varnashram system is tremendously unpopular throughout the world. It is called the caste system. And people consider that if you happen to be born in a lower caste, then you are hopelessly condemned to a life without future from the day you're born to the day you die. But according to Krishna and according to all the scriptures, the varna and ashram is not determined by birth. It is determined by your natural inclinations. In fact, it is said, if one who was born in a family of chandalas or dog eaters, if such a person is a devotee of the Lord and is sincerely chanting the name of God, he is to be considered more elevated and be given more respect than the Brahmins. Lord Kapiladev explained, Aho bhata svapachato gariyam. This verse explains how if one is born even in the lowest untouchable family of dog eaters, if he's a devotee of God, he's fit to be the spiritual master for the whole world. But if one is born even in the most high-class Brahmin family, but he's not a devotee, he cannot even deliver himself, what to speak of anybody else. So you see, this system is meant not to give some people prestige and take it away from others. It is meant to give everyone a perfect opportunity to purify his life. And those who understand it will respect every living being. A God-conscious person who sees God everywhere and in everything must respect everyone as part of God. It is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Athapum birdvijastrestas varana shrami vivagasha Svanushtatasya dharmasya samsidir haritoshanam. Whatever one's natural occupational duty may be, whether one is a housewife or a mother, whether one is a businessman, a doctor, a farmer, a lawyer, an engineer, a dentist, an industrialist, a brahmachari, a sannyasi. One's life is perfect if one simply performs one's duty, samsidir hari toshanam, in such a way that it pleases Krishna. If you do not, it is explained in the Bhagavatam, dharma shvanushtata pungshang vishvakshena katashiyat notpadiyed yatiratim shrama evahi kevalam. This means that whatever your occupation is in life, whatever your religion may be in life, it is all simply a useless waste of time if it does not attract your consciousness to hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. If in the end you have not developed love of God, your life is a waste. After all, at the time of death, it doesn't matter how many vows you have taken in life. It doesn't matter how many disciples you have made in your life. If you are a sannyasi, it doesn't matter how much money you've made or how many children you have created if you are a grihasta. The only thing that matters at the point of death is how you have realized your natural propensity to love God, because everything else is taken away. If you are a sannyasi, very proud that I only have one cloth, at the time of death that cloth is taken away. If you have millions of disciples, they're all taken away. If you have millions of dollars and a big, beautiful mansion and wonderful family members, they're all taken away. Death will come sometime, tomorrow or one of the days after. The question is, what is our state of consciousness at that time? Antakali chamame vasmaran bhaktva kalevaram yam yam vapi smaran bhavam chijatyante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kontaya sadata bhava bhavata. Krishna says that one who is conscious of me with love at the time of death attains me. The inner treasures of the heart are eternal. The outer treasure, which is perceived by the senses, will be stolen away by the almighty force of time very soon. If we read the history books, we see great conquerors who conquered nations, who subdued great kings and enemies. But what do they have? What is left? There's a beautiful poem. And in this poem, this Vaishnava is explaining that Sanatana Dharma, the natural function of the soul, is to be a servant. Everyone is serving something or someone. Either we are serving our family, or we are serving our guru, or we are serving our employer, the big, big politicians. They are the servants of the society. Some years back in America, President Nixon, the biggest, most powerful man in all the world, he thought, I was the enjoyer. I am the controller. But actually, when he made mistakes, they threw him away. They took him from his throne. Which meant what? Actually, he is simply the servant of the people. Everyone is a servant. It is the natural function of the soul to serve. Just like it is the natural function of sugar to be sweet or chili to be hot. And we find old people, when their family members leave them. In India, it's not so much like this. But in America, when you become old, you don't have anybody. Everyone's gone. At the most, they'll send you some money. If you're lucky. This is modern civilization. Their families have left. Wife has died. Children just don't want to waste time with them. So what do? They buy a dog and they serve the dog. Srila Prabhupada, our Guru Maharaj, he was astonished when he came to America. He said he would go in the building that he was living for some time in Bowery. Sometimes he would be walking through the hallway and he would look in the door of somebody's home and there would be an old man sitting with his dog watching television. And that is the way he passed the last days of his life. And everyone, without exception, is serving their senses. But what kind of masters are these senses? That we must ask. Let us be realistic. If you serve someone your whole life through, for 60, 70, 80 years, When you finally come to the fag end of your life, you're expecting them to allow you to retire and give you some pleasure. But how ruthless your senses are. This particular Vaishnav poet, he's praying that I have served my senses all my life from the day I was born. Now I'm 90 years old. And I'm still serving my senses. And I've never been satisfied by serving them. And they've never been satisfied by however much I give them. And now I'm at the fag end of my life. I'm disturbed. I'm agitated. I'm tired. And my senses will not allow me to resign. They are forcibly pushing me to remain their servant. Ruthless. That is the nature of the senses. Therefore, Krishna explains in Gita, param dristva nivartate, that human life, human civilization is meant for the purpose of coming above the temporary superficial goals of life and orienting our life in such a way that we can realize the inner truths, the treasure of love that is dormant within us. If we become a servant of Krishna, we are never the loser. It is said that when we take one step toward Krishna, he takes 10 steps toward us. So the Varnashram system, which is the standard of civilization, is meant to teach everyone how to love Krishna in whatever situation in life they are in right now. Grihe tako vane tako sada hari bole tako suke duke bolo nako varne hari nam korore gai gora madhu sware gai gora madhu sware. That whether one is a grihastha living with family or whether one is a sannyasi living in jungle, just learn how to serve the Lord by chanting His name, and you will find the ultimate happiness beyond pleasures and pains of this world. In this regard, there is a beautiful story in the Bhagavad Purana. It describes the ancestral line of Swayambhuva Manu. Swayambhuva Manu was born directly from Lord Brahma, who was the first living being of this world, of this universe. And Swayambhuva Manu was put in charge of humanity as king. He had 2 children. His eldest son was of the name Priyavrat, and his younger son was of the name Uttanapada. Now what happened is, it is natural that the eldest son takes the throne. But Priyavrat, from his very childhood, he never had the slightest interest toward being a king. He simply wanted to associate with sadhus and hear and chant the glories of the Lord. So he approached Narada Muni, a great spiritual master, and he resided in an ashram at Gandhamadana mountain. And there, Srila Narada Muni explained to him all the principles of devotional life and how to live in the renounced order. So this wasn't a bad thing, because his younger brother, Uttanapada, he became a very great, very noble, very, very religious, pious king. And it is said that good fruits come from good trees. Because he was such a very, very deeply committed devotee of God, who was ruling the citizens and ruling the state simply in a humble mood of service to the Lord. The Lord awarded him such an illustrious son as Dhruva Maharaj. When Dhruva Maharaj came of age, Maharaj Uttanapada, he dedicated the remainder of his life simply to hear and chant the glories of the Lord, and Dhruva became a very great king. Dhruva Maharaj, in his childhood, he renounced everything of this world. He went to the forests. He followed his guru's order. And there he had the direct darshan of Trishni Garb, avatar of Vishnu. And when he saw the beautiful, illustrious form of Narayan, he was thinking, I don't want this kingdom. I don't want all that fame and all that power. All I want, my Lord, is simply to remember your lotus feet forever. I'm happy. I was looking for a kingdom, but I have attained you. I was looking for broken pieces of glass, but I have found the most precious diamond. But Lord Narayan, he said, yes, now you have me. Now you are my devotee. You will never forget me throughout your life. But it is your duty. You must be king. But do it for me. Don't do it for you. Do it for me. That is true renunciation. So Dhruva Maharaj ruled. And in this way, the dynasty continued in this mood of loving service to the Lord, Sri Krishna. But what happened is after Maharaj Prachini Barhishat, he had children of the name of the Prachetas, and they had no one, after they left this world, there was no one to take over the kingdom. So Swayambhuva Manu was thinking, the only one is Priyavrat. But how in the world am I going to convince him to come down off that mountain, get married, have children, and rule this country? So Swayambhuva Manu went. And when Priyavrat saw him coming, he was in the presence of his Guru Maharaj, Narada Muni. And they were thinking, how can we get out of this one? And Swayambhuva Manu understood that in the presence of Narada Muni, who's simply preaching renunciation of everything of this world, how am I possibly going to be able to convince him to have a family, to live in a palace, and to be a king? So at that time, Lord Brahma appeared. He did not come alone, but he came with Lord Shankar, Indra, Atreya Muni, and many, many great sages, Atri Muni. And Lord Brahma, he spoke. He said, Priyavrat, please try to understand that if one is a devotee of the Lord, it doesn't matter what position he is in society. If a person is a devotee of the Lord, he is simply concerned with one purpose, how I can best please Krishna. It is Krishna's order to you to take this kingdom. So why should you be afraid? And then he began to explain how you must take a wife, you must be very affectionate to her, you must raise children, you must be very affectionate to them, you must take on all of these very, very difficult responsibilities of ruling a kingdom. But why will you do it? You should do it in the mood of a servant of God, for the pleasure of God. That is all. And if you have that spirit, then factually you are in the renounced order of life. And when Brahma spoke, even Narada Muni himself agreed with these words. That yes, true renunciation is to practice our natural inclinations, perform our duties in a spirit of devotion, offering the fruits of our action in the loving service of Bhagwan. That is all. Arjuna was also very much like Priyavrat. He was supposed to fight a war. And by fighting that war, if winning, he and his brothers would be kings. He did not want to do it. Krishna told him that you must perform your duty. But that is not enough. Jagyaratat kamanon yatra lokumam karma bandana taratam karma kondaya mukta sangha samachara. Work done as a sacrifice for the pleasure of God must be performed. Otherwise, whatever work you do will only cause you bondage. Work is worship when it is offered to God. Sarvadharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarvapapebhyo moksha ishami masucha. Krishna tells Arjuna, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to me. That is a sannyasi. Krishna says, not one who lights no fire or does no work. Real renunciation is to simply accept whatever is favorable in the discharge of service to the Lord and to reject whatever is unfavorable. This is the Varnashram system. Therefore, we find within the Srimad Bhagavatam, within the Bhagavad Gita, we find great sannyasis like Narada Muni. We find souls who give up everything in this world simply to preach the glories of the Lord. And we also find so many celebrated personalities, like Prahlad and Dhruva. They were pure devotees of the Lord, but they were grihasthas. Shukadev Goswami was a sannyasi. Vyasadev, his father, was a grihastha. Who's better? Can anyone of you dare to try to judge who's better, Vedavyas or Shukadev Goswami? It would be an offense to even think that one could be better than the other. They are both simply doing the will of the Lord. Narada Muni is a sannyasi. Lord Shiva is a grihastha. Who's better? Anyone dare to try to decide who is better? Bhishma was a brahmachari. He never married. He is one of the great Mahajans. And Yudhisthira, he had wife, he had children. Similarly, Lord Brahma, he also has wife, and he has so many children. Factually, we're all his children. So who's better, Bhishma or Brahma? In God's eyes, he does not see the external form. He sees the spirit of devotion. And therefore, according to how we can best serve Krishna, and according to how we are most naturally suited or inclined to render service, we are categorized within the Varnashram system. Our Guru Maharaj used to say, it is better to be a sincere sweeper of the street than to be a charlatan Brahmin guru who is simply concerned with his name and fame. There is a story of a Brahmin and a prostitute. And the prostitute was having sex so many times a day, and the Brahmin, looking out his window, was counting how many customers every day. And he was a preacher. So everyone has to have examples to use to preach. So he would go out into the streets, and he would every day announce to the world that this prostitute is the symbol of sin. And he would explain how many people she had as customers every day. And he would terribly blaspheme her character. So, by the inconceivable will of God, and by their karma, let us say, they both happened to die at the exact same time. At that time, the messengers from Vaikuntha, the Vishnu Dhutas, came on a flower airplane to collect the prostitute. And the Yamadutas, the messengers of Yamaraj, who dwells in hell, came with their strong, mighty ropes to torturously tear away the Brahmin. And the Brahmin was thinking, what is this? He was looking across the street and he saw these beautiful Vishnu Dutas about to escort this prostitute on a flower airplane. And he said, you see that? You have mixed up your addresses. You're supposed to be there and they're supposed to be here. Even on the divine level, there's mismanagement. And the Yamadutas, they recheck their records. No, you are the Brahmin? According to our records, you are so proud that you're always condemning this innocent woman who's just trying to make her livelihood. It's the only way she knows. Although she was committing sinful activities, in her heart, she was praying to God, my dear Lord, I am so fallen, I am so degraded, I am so sinful. But because I have to feed my old parents, my mother, my father, and there's no other way I could raise money except in this way, I'm forced to act in the most abominable way. Please, my Lord, forgive me, please. And in this way, she was constantly thinking of God with a humble heart. But you were so proud, you were thinking you were better than somebody else. Therefore, we are about to introduce you to Yamaraj. Krishna doesn't see the external, he sees the internal. In the Vedas, there's so many examples in the lives of prostitutes who are considered the lowest people in society. It doesn't mean we should become prostitutes. It means we should learn how to become pure in heart, no matter what situation we're in. I tell the story of two men who were going to Bhagavad Gita class. And on the way, they came by some beautiful woman who was also like that. And one of them said, excuse me, but I have to talk to this lady here. No, no, come to Gita class. This is not good. I know it's not good, but I'll meet you later tonight. So the man who sat at the Gita class as the speaker was giving lecture, he couldn't hear a word of it. The whole time he was thinking, my friend is enjoying so much now. He's with that beautiful woman enjoying. How wonderful. And I'm so unfortunate that I'm sitting here with all these sadhus. And the person who was laying in bed with his woman, in his heart he was thinking, what a sinful, abominable person I am. Because of my uncontrolled senses, my friend is so fortunate that he's in Bhagavad Gita class with all those wonderful, great devotees. So who is Krishna conscious? Krishna sees from within the heart. Of course, if we commit sinful activities purposely, then there will be a tremendous karmic reaction. We must strive to live pure lives. But the principle that we're trying to explain is that whatever your position of life is, if you are simply trying to please Krishna, your life will be perfect. Now, how to please Krishna? That is the question. Krishna says in Gita, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantate. That for one who is constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which he can come to me. If we are not on that pure consciousness state, we have no direct access to the Lord within our heart. There are so many voices within our heart. Maya can sound just like Krishna. We cannot not discriminate unless we are free of all motivations for material enjoyment. Therefore, it is said in Gita, Tadvidi pranipatina pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninastata darshanah. If you want to know the truth, you must approach a self-realized soul, inquire submissively, and render service to such a person. The genuine sadhu, the spiritual master, guru, the sincere Vaishnava, he is one who is simply repeating the word of God through his words and through his life. And by receiving instruction from such great souls, we have direct access to pleasing Krishna. It is simple. Priyavrat, we told this story, why was he the perfect grihastha? And he was also the perfect renunciate. For him, there was no difference. When he was living in the renounced order for all those years, in the hermitage of Gandhamadana Mountain, or when he was living in a big, beautiful, spacious palace, he was married to Barahishmati, who was the daughter of Vishwakarma. And he had 10 sons. And of his sons, 3 became sannyasis. And the other 7 became great leaders. Priyavrat was perfectly situated because he was always humbling himself to the guidance of senior personalities. He took the ashram with the blessings of Narada Muni, Brahma, and Swayambhuva Manu. His grandfather, his father, and his guru. So therefore, there was no difference. Renunciation simply means to please Krishna, to put everything else aside. For him, it would have been sense gratification to remain a sannyasi,
not a sannyasi, he wasn't a sannyasi, but to remain in that renounced state. Because he could best serve Krishna in another way. Srila Prabhupada, our Guru Maharaj, used to say that Krishna consciousness means not to be attached to living in a palace and not to be attached to living under a tree. If you can best serve in a palace, then it's maya to live under a tree. And if you can best serve under a tree, it's maya to live in a palace. So the difference between maya or illusion and Krishna consciousness is simply how I can best serve. And how do we learn how to best serve? From the self-realized souls. From the representatives of Krishna in this world, who are dedicating their lives to His loving service and repeating His beloved words. Then spiritual life is simple. Simple for the simple and complicated for the complicated. If you try to figure it out with your own brain cells, you'll never understand Krishna or what He wants. Arjuna was far more intelligent than any of us, and when he was trying to figure out with his fertile brain what is the best course of action, he was completely bewildered. He was physically and mentally a wreck. Karapanya doso pahata svabhava prichyamitam dharma samudacheha. But as soon as he just humbled himself and said, Krishna, Gurudev, what should I do? And he was liberated. Asochanam vasochastvam pragyavayam shabhashase. Krishna told Arjuna, his first words, you are speaking like a learned man, but all your scholarship is only making a big fool out of you. Therefore, in all of the great scriptures, this is the number one most important spiritual function. Whether you are a grihastha, vanaprastha, brahmachari, sannyasi, whether you're a brahmin, kshatriya, vaishya, or sudra, the first and foremost principle of spirituality is to humbly and submissively inquire into what is the truth from the self-realized souls. And serve that instruction. And in this particular age of Kali Yuga, where people have very little inclination spiritually, people are not inclined to going and living in Himalayas and performing great, great tapasya. People are basically pretty poor-hearted in this age. The great benediction that is being revealed by the scriptures and revealed by the great devotees of the Lord is that in this age, if one simply takes shelter of the congregational chanting of the holy name of God, one will establish that pure consciousness within. Sankirtan means to chant the holy name of God in the association of holy people. We cannot do it alone. We need support. United we stand, divided we fall. The age of Kali is very powerful, and she could break any of our wills to pieces very easy and mislead us. Therefore, to chant the holy name of the Lord in the intimate company of those who are sincerely on the spiritual path of devotion, that is the sublime process which has been revealed by the Lord Himself in His divine form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we see how simple and sublime this process is. Just like this evening, we have Devamrita Prabhu, Satyavrat, Shamanand, Kardama Muni, very, very sincere devotees in the renounced order of life.
We also have Nathji, Dr. Desai, Hridayananda Rishikesh Mafatlal Mahaprabhu, Mr. R.K. Maheshwari, Raghunath. These are all very sincere souls in the Grihastha order of life. Sahadev, Rohini Nandan, the list is very long. Is there any distinction? They're all dancing together. They're all chanting together. They're all hearing Krishna Katha together. They're all taking prasad together. The only difference is there's a need for every ashram to serve Krishna. But it's not that one is better than the other. We are all devotees. We have here some boys from our orphanage who have no money, who have no home, picked off the street. At our temple, we have about 60 of these boys living, Lady Northcote Hindu Orphanage. And we have big, big, big industrialists. They're dancing together. Is one better than the other? Do they think like that? No. Is one better than the other? Do they think like that? No. We're all just serving God. We're all united in this principle of glorifying God. The ladies are in back, men are in front. But in our hearts, there is no difference. To keep things pure, we keep separate. Sannyasi or Grihastha, that one is better than the other. They're just different ways of serving. So it is this process of coming together to chant the holy names that can bring all of humanity together in love and trust. Because in the presence of the divine sound vibration of God's name, our consciousness is transformed to the transcendental platform, and all these superficial relative designations disappear from our hearts, from our minds. Huh? These children, they do not speak one word of English. They don't know what I'm talking about. Huh? But when the kirtan was going on, they knew what I was talking about. They were dancing in ecstasy. Now they're waiting for prasad. Very patiently, I must say. Philosophy is meant ultimately to bring us to the point of coming together to chant the holy names. Cheto darapanamarajanam bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam. Sreyakarava chandrakavataranam vidyavadhu jivanam. Anandam budivardhanam pratipadam punam ritashvadanam. Sarvatma snaparamparam vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. The congregational chanting of the name of Krishna is the prime benediction for all humanity because it cleanses the dust from the mirror of the heart and allows us to taste the infinite, unlimited bliss of the sweetness of pure love of God. Prema Pumartha Mahan. So let us take this opportunity. Let us train our children in this line of thought. And let us dedicate our lives to our true Dharma, to awaken that natural tendency to please Krishna in anything we do, wherever we are. And let us chant the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Thank you very much. And think about Krishna. This is actually a most wonderful and sublime example of everything we're saying in this class tonight. That whatever we have, we want to utilize it to share our love with Krishna, with others. Our Raghunath Das, Rajesh, he has living in a nice apartment with nice lawn. So what is he doing? The center of his apartment is a beautiful temple of the Lord. And the whole lawn has been transformed into Vrindavan. Vrindavan is that place where Krishna is being glorified. Krishna never takes a foot out of Vrindavan. And Krishna is none different than his name. Tatra tishtami narada yatra gayanti mad bhakta. Krishna tells Narada Muni, wherever my devotees are coming together to chant my names and glories, I am there. So this is Vrindavan. And how much we should be grateful when someone takes the time and energy to make wonderful arrangements for devotees to come together to perfect their human form of life by hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. And tonight, this program and the feast especially was sponsored by the mother of our Rakesh, Mrs. Kapoor. She is a lady with a very big and beautiful heart. And her husband wins the award of the best dancer of the night. We want to thank them for their kindness in making this evening possible.